Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, everybody here in Chicago and Colorado. Welcome to this podcast. In today's segment, we'll be talking with Mr. Jim McKee. He is the founder and CEO of Webpack Labs, and they're located in Colorado. They're one of the leaders in threat intelligence gathering for cybersecurity. Jim, thanks for your time, and let's go ahead and get started, please.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to this.
It's really an honor. Thank you. Now, we looked up your bio, and you seem to have a very deep and rich background in cybersecurity. Can you tell us some highlights of your career to kind of when you first got started to kind of where you are at now today?
Okay. Back in 1995, myself and four friends wrote the world's first enterprise payment server, and that normally puts people to sleep. But we were able to write the software and build the application that allowed for real-time credit card authorizations on the Internet. So we were pioneers of e-commerce. Well, when you make the Internet a place of commerce, all of a sudden it became a place to go investigate and steal things. And so in the early days, there was virtually, you know, no protection for web merchants, and they were holding credit card numbers and bank account numbers and other things. And so that led us into, you know, fraud, authentication, encryption services, and then eventually into information security. And so my task, my goal was to how to protect merchants. When it turned out that all organizations were at risk, that's why we came out with our data. We developed our data sets, and then we matched those with our services, which allowed us to give corporations, any organization in the world, we would be able to provide them with finished cyber threat intelligence to help protect their network and their databases.
Okay. Now, Webpack is your main company, I'm assuming. Now, is this a company that you created on your own, or do you have other partners to help you with that? Or?
Oh, I created it with some partners back in 2011. As startups go, people move on and do other things, and so I'm the remaining founding partner.
Nothing wrong with that at all.
No.
Now, tell us about the Red Sky Alliance and kind of how the two come together.
Okay. When I founded the original company, which was named Red Sky Alliance in 2011, it was a fusion center, and our clients at that time were all Fortune 100 companies, and we were doing targeted research for cyber threat intelligence research for them. And so we shared this data amongst our membership, and it was a very good program. As we moved along and developed more services, it turned out that my membership agreement that I wrote in 2011 wasn't really working for people who didn't want to be a member of our fusion center. And so we stood up a separate company called Webpack Labs, and then that company was able to do other types of research and reporting on an individual basis and also build some product services. In 2017, I became tired of running two companies and doing two tax returns and all of that. So I decided just to merge the two companies because we had the same employee shareholders. And so at that point in time, we were running only under the Webpack Labs name. A couple of years ago, I'd say around 2020, I was creating more services, and Red was our marketing name, our marketing color. And so I decided to transfer everything back over to the Red Sky Alliance name. And then, of course, our products and services that we were offering, you know, had names like, you know, Red Current, Red Pain, Red X-Ray, you know. So we decided to stick with Red. And when I moved the corporation from New Hampshire to Colorado this year, well, I register the corporation as Red Sky Alliance. So we will be phasing out the WAPAC Labs name, you know, for the rest of this year.
Okay, excellent. Now, how long have you guys been in business?
We've been in business since 2011, and next month we will have been in business for 11 years, which is pretty outstanding for a startup company.
Well, it's especially great, you know, especially through COVID, because so many companies have, you know, went out of business. So I think the fact that you're still standing around is, you know, a huge testament right there. Now, do you have a presence in other countries as well, like clients or other offices in other kind of like Asia or maybe Pacific Rim, Europe?
No, it's very difficult to have offices and corporate employees in other countries. I went down that road at Painlinks Corporation, and I chose to work through resellers and distributors in other countries. And so that seems to work very well for us. Yes, we have customers in other countries, and they are being served by a VAR, a value-added reseller, or another type of reseller or consulting group. So that way we can have a presence in all over the world and not have to staff it. Our partnership with Dun & Bradstreet allows us global distribution because our data can be matched to any DUNS number in the world. And so Dun & Bradstreet has us on their marketplace, and that allows any Dun & Bradstreet user to go to the marketplace and buy our breach data. And like I said, it will match any DUNS number in the world. And so they're our primary international partner.
Okay, excellent. Now, who is your typical customer base? Is it the SMB market, federal government, local governments, Fortune 500, or perhaps kind of a conglomeration of everybody in there?
It's a little bit of the above because we've had, you know, Fortune 100 companies as customers, you know, for 11 years. But I looked at the landscape about 2 years ago and saw that 95% of U.S. businesses were getting no cyber intelligence, no cyber threat support. And that's when I developed with a team our Red X-Ray product, which was then targeted at the SMB market. It had to be at a price point that they could afford, but it's more to the M instead of the S because too many small businesses don't have any resources or employees to help them with their cyber threats. And they are the customers of the MSPs and the MSSPs. But if you get into the medium market, well, then you have a cyber, you know, an information security department with trained people who then know what to do with the data that we're providing. And our Red X-Ray service offers the 10 data sets, but if you get a hit in one of those sets, well, someone needs to look into it and say, oh, this is no big deal, it's a paste bin mention, or we have a keylogged account, or we found our database, our customer database for sale on the dark web. And so it just depends on the skill level of the client and how we can best serve them.
Excellent. Well, I'm at your website right now. It seems like you have a whole plethora of products and other kinds of services. Can you kind of do a deep dive into some of them that are like people what they use most and like what your sweet spots are in these products and services?
All right. Well, we have two websites. We have our free website, which is redskyalliance.org, and we post no charge cyber threat intelligence reports and articles in addition to IPs and domains. We also have training materials there, and this is the partner of our weekly cyber threat seminars. We offer a 10-minute seminar every Wednesday morning We call it Red Shorts because it's red for Red Sky Alliance, and short because it's less than 10 minutes. And so we have a you know, something, one of our analysts presents something that is current, and people can see what we're thinking about. Our corporate website is the WAPACLabs.com website, and that's where, you know, we list our products. You know, our product services start at the top with our Cyber Threat Analysis Center, which we call CTAC. And this is the first service that sits on top of our 10 data sets. And we can research any IP, any domain in the world, and present you with 10 years of history of cyber threats that have been hitting against this particular entity. This is very important for organizations like M&A groups and insurance groups, because they can just see the cyber health of an organization before they would buy, sell, invest, or insure. And so this is a very easy thing for a due diligence group to view, because it's, you put the information in and the report is you know, is presented immediately. The red current is the list of all 10 of our data sets. We found that people didn't want to use our engine. They had their own engine, but they wanted to complement or add additional data sets, you know, to their service. And so the red current allows for our individual data sets to be offered. Red Pain is our dark web search engine. I was finding that people were coming to us and wanting to know what's being said about my CEO or my CEO's family on the dark web, or how do I know if my databases are for sale, or what's going on. So we built an engine that allows us to do that, and this is also included in our Red X-Ray and CTAC product. Red X-Ray is our low-end product, because this was what we wrote for the SMB market, and this can be used by anyone in the world, anyone who's interested in avoiding cyber threats and breaches, or especially if they're storing PII. I always add this to Microsoft 365, because that's a great service, and they have a SIM called Defender, but they only have two answers to a three-part question. They do a really good job with what's inside and what's going on, but they can't see the threats that haven't broken in yet. And that's what we add in the SMB market. We can show an organization of the threats that haven't broken in every morning. And this isn't all the threats in the world. These are the targeted cyber threats that are facing that enrolled entity. And the file can then be put into the SIM or into Defender. And right there, they have blacklisted these threats. And so those three services can, you know, make life so much easier for any size organization. Red X-Ray Plus, that's Red X-Ray with a dashboard, a user dashboard. And we designed this for our supply chain and portfolio users. This allows one person to be able to look at cyber threats that are being lodged or launched against their portfolio companies, or their supply chain members, or their clients, or their insured. And so this way, one person can monitor the cyber threats against a group of organizations. And the nice thing about our services, starting at the top for CTAC down to Red X-Ray, is the fact that we do not require a network connection or any hardware or software or appliance to be installed. And so you can monitor your supply chain, and your supply chain members don't even know that you're doing it. It's not that we're trying to be sneaky, but if you ask any supply chain member, how's your cybersecurity, they're going to say no problems. But if you use our service, you can see if there are some problems and you can point them out and say, you know, you really need to do something here because this is, you know, this is something that could affect our production. If you have a breach or a ransomware attack and you cannot ship the components that I need to finish my product or service. And then Red X-Ray Advanced and Red X-Ray Full Spectrum, those are just other services that we offer with the Red X-Ray line, even to, you know, offering protection for, you know, through partners, you know, executive protection or executive travel in addition to cyber insurance and things like that. And so Threat Recon is something else that we invented. That is our that's our botnet search engine, and so we can run the botnet analysis through that. And so by having our own data, which we have sourced and collected and store ourselves, it allows us to offer some very competitively priced services, you know, to clients out there anywhere in the world. And since IPs and domains and everything are digital, we don't have any language problems, because if you put something in, we can show you the artifacts that are associated with it. And so we used to do a lot of consulting, and we decided that writing industry reports was better. And so that's why we offer our intelligence reports at no charge on our Red Sky Alliance portal, because that's where I send people who are interested in learning more about cyber threat intelligence or information security, because we break our reports up into industry segments. We've been very strong in finance and oil and gas and maritime for the past 10 years, but we also cover 10 more industry segments. So if you're in hospitality, or you're in, you know, power production, you know, utilities, we also write articles and report in those industries too, because a lot of people don't know where to turn. And what we can show people is we can show them that the cyber threats that they don't know about. And when I'm doing a sales presentation, which I do almost every day, is I ask people, what's the value to your organization of a cyber threat, a cyber breach that didn't occur? You know, any of us can go out in the ether and see that a cyber breach can cost up to $1.4 million to pay off the damage to your network and your services, or even paying a ransom, or the legal fees you're going to have to pay, because if any of your customers' PII escape, you're probably going to have a lawsuit. So if you looked at the price points of our products, and I'm not selling anything today, so I'm not going to mention any of that, but if you're interested in keeping this from happening in the first place, you know, take a look at this, because for a couple hundred dollars a month, you can know more than most people would know about any organization. And so that way you can set up with your policies and procedures, your CMMC, your HIPAA, all the other things that people are being faced with today. Our services actually can give you a checkbox, a check mark in a box on ongoing compliance. We sat down about a year ago, and we went through each one of those assessments, and we identified exactly what part of each assessment on ongoing compliance we would be able to help companies with. And so we do a lot more than just send you data. We want you to be able to understand the data and understand why it is important, you know, to have this intelligence to keep breaches from happening in the first place. I'm sorry I rambled there, so I'll let you ask another question.
No, it's important. Do you want to add any more to that, or
No, I think I kind of took that thread and took it longer than people would probably want it to hear, but I was on a roll.
No worries. Now, this is an issue I face with SMBs that I'm trying to sell, like a product or service, you know, cyber-related one right now. It's like, well, we don't want anything because we've never been hit yet. And I guess the question that kind of parallels with that is, you don't know what you don't know, and how do you plan to find it?
Right, right. And a lot of times companies have been hit, and there's already a Trojan inside, and they're waiting to do something else, because those of us have been in the business for a while understand, you know, the importance of doing pen testing and training and phishing training, because most large breaches begin with a simple phish, where someone opens up a spreadsheet or thinks they have a payment advice or an invoice. Well, they open it up and boom, they've been infected with the Trojan, and the Trojan can call home, and the Trojan can then sit there idle until it calls home and asks for the ransomware to be injected. And so in looking, you know, doing a post-breach reporting for the past couple of years, finding out when the actual insertion happened, it's not something that happened yesterday, the day before. The insertion could have happened a year ago or 2 years ago. And someone saying that we haven't been hit yet, they don't really know what's there yet. And so that's why it's so important, you know, to have the analysis engine taking a look at things, because we provide the artifacts. We can see what domains or what IPs had been calling on you and the history behind them. And so in any organization that says they haven't been hit, the demand hasn't been made yet. And we know that the Russians have been working, providing the North Koreans with software for ransomware and how to steal Bitcoin. And so our adversaries are actually working together against us. And so it's not just a 14-year-old kid, you know, with a 5-year-old computer up in the attic, you know, trying to deface a website like it was, you know, in the previous century. You know, we've got state-sponsored cyber thieves who are funding governments and, you know, they can shut down pipelines, they can shut down power grids. There's just so much out there, and people have been not interested in this for a long time. When I was calling on people in the year 2020, they were telling me that the information security was like number 11 on their top 10. And they just never get around to it. Whereas now, 22 years later, you know, you've got cyber insurance, you've got CMMC, you've got all these organizations trying to help protect people. But your organization really needs to spend some time looking at what can be done, not wringing their hands after the ransomware demand has been made and your personal emails and your corporate emails are all for sale on the internet. And even if you pay off the ransomware group, you know, are they going to give you the key or not? Or are they still going to sell your data? And there's something going on in the general accounting office these days. I wrote an article about this that can be found on redskyalliance.org. The GAO is very concerned about state-sponsored cyber terrorism. And if an organization or a power grid or a pipeline or whatever is hit by Cozy Bear, well, Cozy Bear is a service, as we would say, is a group that's run by the Russian FSB. Is that an act of war? Well, if it's an act of war, your cyber insurance carrier can say, oh, look at Section 14. We don't cover an act of war. So you find yourself without any insurance because now it's an act of war. And I'm really wondering, if some lawyers are looking at this and looking at the policies and saying, you can be on the insurance side on one and make everything into an act of war, not pay anything, or you can be the client who's been buying cyber insurance for the past 10 years and never had a claim, and then find that because someone, someone in my business has then deemed that this is a state-sponsored cyber, act of war, well, I want you to pay. And I can just see whatever the coverage would be, I'm sure there's going to be a lot more spent on the legal battle of whether someone is going to pay up or not. At the same time, you can have an entire power grid or power company or a pipeline organization be off the air while the lawyers are all posturing on who's going to pay who. So, besides, the poor municipalities out there that don't have any cyber threat intelligence help, and the small town gets hit with ransomware, there's no budget for it, but then the local hospital, the EMTs, the police department, the fire department, the school, everything is shut down. And it's, every little town is worried about budgets and what can they afford to do, but you hit them with ransomware and shut down the entire, public services, well, now lives are at stake. So, besides just, Jim being in cybersecurity and having collections and honeypots and doing this, there are lives at stake for people in situations where organizations like hospitals and police departments and fire departments have been shut down. And there's nothing they can do until they pay, or they had to have planned ahead to know what they don't know to block these things. So there's no easy answer here, but you need to be prepared.
Yeah, I mean the one question I get asked is if you get hit with the ransomware attack, you pay the ransom and 9 out of 10 times or 10 out of 10 times, I'll say no, don't pay it. Because one, it's only going to fuel the motivation. And two, there's no guarantee it's going to stop, and they'll probably come back for more.
And so that's true. That's been my advice. And the other thing is if the Trojan is still there, and if someone has gotten, I'm just going to pick a number, $1 million out of you in February, why won't they ask for another $1 million in November?
Right. And another thing, the attacks on critical infrastructure. One thing I keep getting asked is, well, how come it's such a problem these days? Well, 22 years ago, as you said, cybersecurity wasn't even thought of. It was all about trying to get, protect the physical access to entry into
right,
the building.
Right.
Nobody thought about cyber. So yeah, that's why we're kind of paying the price for that today. But anyway, now to move on here, now how can you blacklist cyber threats to keep them from returning? I know you can do it in the routers, the firewalls, you can, set up certain rules and permutations, but is there a separate way that you go about doing that, or?
Well, when we have our daily threat file for any organization, that threat file can be put into SIM, and then those IPs, domains, could then be, they're blocked, they're blacklisted in that, and so that's where we step away. Here you go. You put this in here, and we'll send you a new file tomorrow morning with what we see. But that's for the network engineers, who I'm not one of them, who can explain how all that stuff works. But it's a very simple process. Your SIMs normally get feeds, and they're generalized feeds, but you're more interested in the feed that we're providing you because those are the targeted threats against you, not the threats that are present, all around the globe or in 50 states, because you need to know who's coming after you. We used to use the little story of the Russian sled driver. He's going through Siberia in the snow, and he doesn't really care about all the wolves in the world or all the wolves in Siberia. He's only concerned about the wolf that's chasing his sled right there. And so what we're trying to do is provide people with the with the nearest threat to them that we can identify and say, you need to deal with this right now before it's too late.
Okay, cool. Now, do you know how dangerous a keylogger count is to your organizations? Now, I'm studying for my IT security, that Security Plus exam from CompTIA, and one of their examples they use are about keyloggers. Well, how prevalent are keyloggers now these days, and if it's still prevalent, how stealthy have they become, and how does someone know if there is really a keylogging malware or worm, virus, what have you, in their system?
Well, there are two different things here. There is keylogger software, and this was invented probably 10, 15 years ago, so parents could see where their children were going because it was logging all of the keystrokes. And, you know, kids would go to bed, and mom or dad could then go to the quote, the family, unquote, computer and see where their kids had been. Well, that was a purpose for good. Well, the purpose for evil is keylogger software can be, you know, tricked. You can be tricked into downloading it or getting it into your own system where then someone can sit there and, you know, get your password for your TD Bank account or your investment account or, you know, your credit card account. It can be used for evil, and that's why I never use public Wi-Fi anywhere. If I'm not in my protected office, I will do a hotspot on my phone and use that because I'm not sharing anything with anybody. A keylogged account is where out in the ether someone's email address and their password has been posted. Well, we know where to find this stuff. And if we have ABC Company is our client, and we can report to them that jsmith@abc.com, we have his keylogged account. We have his email address, and we have his password. And this has been very effective when we've been doing customer presentations about people buying our services. A particular one, we were on the phone with a very large communications company, and the prospect on the other end, the VP, asked about that. And we said, all right, let's see if you have any. Well, we put it into CTAC, and we came out with a couple of email addresses and names. And the guy immediately said, give me a minute. He went on hold, and he got on his phone and called these guys and said, you gotta change your password right now. I just looked at it online. So it is dangerous. And if you have someone's username and password, well, then you can be up to all sorts of mischief in addition to asking other people for information or access. See, one of the best ways to make money illegally these days is getting a hold of somebody's staff at 10 minutes to 5 on a Friday afternoon and say, oh, my goodness, we forgot to pay the such and such. Would you please, you know, get a wire out to so-and-so right now or we're going to lose the such and such deal. Well, my background in accounting is, you know, either you have everything signed off on paper because I'm old enough to have been in the paper world, but if it's in the electronic world, you need to actually talk to someone to make sure that this is legitimate because too many companies have been tricked into wiring money around the world and never getting it back because someone spoofed an email address or got a hold of someone who thought that if they didn't do this for the president or the vice president or the CFO, they'd get fired. And so, you know, it's things like that. And, you know, I've written many stories about this, and each one of them has a very unhappy ending. But the point is you have to verify. And since we went into the email world, people forgot how to pick up the phone and talk to people. And if you need to verify a wire or something, you can't just say, are you sure I need to get this out, you know, tonight? And the person, the scammer on the other end says, yeah, if you don't get this out tonight, don't come in on Monday morning. Well, that's kind of strong language. and most people fall for it, you know. But those of us who spent our years in accounting and had to sit with the auditors when they would try to find all the mistakes that we made in the previous year, you've got to have initials. You've got to have a signature. You've got to have authorization. And if so-and-so can't give the authorization, well, guess what? You've got the line of command there. You just move that piece of paper to the upper right-hand corner of your desk, and it sits there until you get the right authorization.
Okay. Yeah, in fact, I think with this digital world, I think another trend that people have been noticing is that people kind of like ghost on you. You know, it's just so easy to hide in the digital world these days, you know, like prospects and other customers, if there's something that they don't want to contact you, just kind of like drop off the face of the earth. But anyway.
Right.
So, in fact, it's funny you talk about emails because this morning, I mean, I get hammered with so many phishing emails. One of the worst ones was in the last couple of weeks. I literally got like 5 emails a day from ignoring any virus thing. It's time to upgrade. Even with marking a spam in Yahoo, it still kept coming through. And this morning, I got another email from PayPal, and I thought it was just another email. But no, I did call it. So no, we did send this. So that's, I mean, I just want to underscore the importance. If you think something is for real, and you're just not sure, always call to make sure. And this PayPal example is something I just kind of want to point out there. Now,
it's a very good point. You have to, and you know, those of us in information security, we are getting spam calls many times a day. I get the same things about, here's a payment. Here's a remittance advice. And the first thing you always do, you always look up at the top of the email, look at the header, and see, did it come from Xerox.com or it came from AK47956 at gmail.com? You know, you've got to be smart. And, you know, even the ones from, you know, I don't use McAfee, but I've gotten the same McAfee email that you get. And so what we try to do in our articles, if we see something going on, we'll write something about it and get it out to our audience, because a lot of people, you know, don't think that everyone out there in the email is as evil as I think they are.
Right. Well, this one got me good because they said, oh, well, we disabled one of your bank accounts. I went, what? So I finally called, and then I called two times to confirm it. Well, they go, well, yeah, you have used bank account a long time, so we got rid of it. And I'm going, okay. So it's just, you know, you just don't know. And I always tell that to people, if anything, always call back that person. In fact, the smishing, the, you know, the false text messages, especially from, like, job recruiters, it's gotten so bad now you can use deep fakes to fake a real candidate, you know? And in fact,
I wrote an article about that not once but twice on these poor people out there, and especially during COVID when, you know, you all of a sudden nearly everyone could work from home, and there were these great job offers coming out in LinkedIn, and you know, there you get the offer there, you'd have the interview, you'd have to fill out all this information. They'd say, well, we're going to, you know, you're hired and you're going to be paid a terrific amount of money. And, oh, we only do, you know, ACH auto deposit. So you need to fill out this this ACH, you know, form. And right there, that was just the end of the story, because right there, the poor, you know, applicant that thought he or she just got a job and they needed a job, and then they just had their bank account drained. It's just so sad. And, you know, they're playing on people's feelings and emotions, and there's nothing worse than being in a rough spot and thinking someone is throwing you a lifeline, and then you just got robbed.
Yeah, that's terrible. But, you know, I get those emails all the time, and 99% of the time I just go right-click delete. But anyway, one of the next topics at hand, I think that this year or last year was one of the big ones that will continue to be a big one, were our supply chain attacks. That's basically, long story short, where cyber attacker is going to find one hole or one weakness in like one vendor and spread that malware around through their thousands of other victims. I think SolarWinds is probably the prime example of that. What are your thoughts on that? Have your partners been affected by that? Have you been affected? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm just really sad that that happened, and it hit so many people. And I think the problem there, if I remember this correctly, it was a result of patch management. The patches weren't done on time. And the simple errors are where the hackers are going to try to get through. And it affected so many businesses. It did not affect mine, but a lot of people were really hurt. And then, as I said before, even the post-breach of this, how many organizations have a new Trojan in there because they were part of this thing? And when's that Trojan going to call home and bring some more malware in? I write articles about ransomware attacks and things, and I have probably a list of 15 things that people should do, like today, not after the breach. And I'm not going to go through them all, but one of them is patch management. Patch management should not be left to the most junior person in your organization. In training, that's the other thing. I look at all these organizations, and I have friends that sell training, and it's like, wow, these people just won't buy the training. It's like, well, everyone needs to be trained. And a couple of years ago, you know, there people were trying to do phishing training and just some hygiene things about what's going on. And like everything else, the people were too busy. And then they got hacked. And it's like, did you have a training program? Oh, you did. But everyone except for these people took it because they were too busy. And you can't be too busy. You can't become complacent. Training should be an ongoing operation in all companies. You know, remember when we were young and we had fire drills at our companies?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I worked for the Bell System for a number of years, and we had fire drills, and we had fire marshals. They were assigned to make sure that there was a head count in departments, and we were all safely outside. And you know, it was, you know, this was stuff that was big, you know, back in the 70s and 80s. And then, you know, people kind of forgot about that, and then they kind of forgot about what is a drill. You know, what is a test? And I'm always happy with the organizations that allow an outsider to do, you know, phishing testing, because, you know, your CEO or the CEO's EA, you know, can click on something and then boom, you know, the training needs to be ongoing, because this whole cyber threat world we live in today, there's no end to it. You know, it's not something that is going to go away, and more companies are going to go out of business, and more people are going to lose their jobs. It's just it's endless, and it's not just, as I said before, the 14-year-old kid with a 5-year-old computer in the attic. These are countries. This is war. You know, I look back at some of the seminars where I spoke and trying to get people to understand this. And it was like, oh, Jim, that was a great presentation. What are you going to do about it? Well, it's number 11 on our top 10 things to do. And it's like, okay, well, you know, I don't do the cleanup after a cyber attack. So it's not like, you know, this is something I want to see or I'm going to make money doing. We try to earn our revenue on the front end and keep attacks from happening. And so that's the song I've been singing for the last 11 years is, what's the value of a cyber threat, a cyber attack that never took place?
Great. Well, talking about the cyber training, I've read numerous articles on it too, and I think it comes down to two things. One, it's not a one and done thing, right? You kind of have to do it at least once every quarter. Two, you got to keep it short because the attention span of human beings is no more than like 30 minutes at length. And three, you got to motivate and encourage your employees. And I think a lot of companies are realizing that, and they're starting to use the things there, the concept called gamification, where you make it competitive, you know, and once you take it on the real world, and then you kind of give out gift cards to those people who maintain some good level of cyber hygiene, so forth. So, and especially in today's world where, you know, with remote work, it's hard to, you know, adjust and reschedule, and, you know, nobody wants to sit through a half-hour meeting on security, you know, training or anything like that. But it's got to be done. So, you know, no if, we're saying there's no if, ands, and buts about it. So,
well, I like the reward part. I've always been a carrot guy and not a stick guy. And, you know, having departments competing against each other for the gift card or whatever, the day, the afternoon off, if they have not fallen for the fishing. It just kind of takes me back to summer camp when we had inspection every day. And, you know, you had to have your racks had to be, you know, all of your stuff had to be put away. Your rack had to be made. Everything had to be swept or mopped. And, you know, we were just kids, but we knew if we did the right thing, we could win the watermelon.
Well, it
really hasn't changed, but the people who are, you know, sitting at their desks, or not even at their desks anymore, they're sitting in their kitchen table working, they need to be trained, and the training, they need to be tested, because it's just too easy. You know, back in the olden days, we said we use our power for good and not evil, because we saw how open, and all these networks were like Swiss cheese, and ports were left open, and it was criminal. But that wasn't, you know, you talk to the CFO, he goes, well, that's not my problem, that's the IT department problem. Go talk to the CIO. It's like, well, I'm not here to get people in trouble or start an argument. It's just you've got trouble, and the trouble is going to end up on your desk, Mr. CFO, because you're the guy who's going to have to find the money to fix everything or pay the ransom or clean everything up so the company can stay in business.
Oh, the whole C-suite's another big hot-button topic. We can get into another time. That's a whole huge sore point, I guess, with a lot of people. But anyway, do you have any client success stories you can share with us? Obviously, without giving out too much confidential information.
Well, here's a success story. We were called on Christmas Eve by a national insurance company that discovered that one of their ports had been left open, and they thought they had lost their databases, and they were frantic. And so I took my team and said, I know this is a really not popular thing, but we've got to see what we can find. And so we had recently written Redpane, which is our dark web search engine. And so we spent 48 hours during Christmas Eve and Christmas Day looking for the databases. Well, the good news was they hadn't been stolen.
Oh, okay.
The bad news is we ruined a lot of people's Christmas, you know, trying to help people. So, you know, as I've told people before, when you subscribe to a cyber threat intelligence service and you're not getting any bad news, that's not a bad thing. It means that your policies and your procedures are actually being effective. You know, I've talked to people who said, are you guys even doing anything? I said, no, we're doing everything we can do, but you're actually doing a really good job. So be happy that you're not getting a bad report card. But that's kind of the success story here. If people are doing the right thing, we can endorse what they're doing because they're doing it right, and we're not seeing any open doors or threats. The other side of it is the people that tell me that, oh, golly gee, that's too expensive, or my boss wouldn't go for that. And then you find out, 30, 60 days later, they had a ransomware attack, and you're just kind of looking at the news and going, well, that sure was a stupid decision. You could have spent a nominal amount of money and avoided that, but either you didn't see the value here, or someone wanted to spend that budget somewhere else. And so we're under non-disclosure agreement with all of our clients, and so I can't really tell you any really cool story, but I can just kind of dance around it. And, as I said, sometimes no news is the best news.
Well, true, but you just don't know what's happening in the background. In fact, there's one company I did a podcast with, and their slogan was very unique. It said, all is quiet on the top, but everything on the bottom is where it's all happening. Very catchy. Anyway,
yeah.
So cool. Anyway, just a few issues about the cyber threat landscape as we start to get in the last segment of our show here. The first one is the Internet of Things. I find this to be a very scary concept. I'm an old-fashioned kind of guy. I really do hate technology, believe it or not, as much as in cybersecurity I am. I don't have any mobile apps. I still drive an analog Honda 2003 Civic. Don't have any smart gadgets. I just think it's very scary with all this interconnectivity and reliance on technology. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, do you have a smart home or smart car or anything like that? Or?
Well, I just know that my toaster's mad at my refrigerator, but other than that, things are going pretty well. That's a joke. Well, the problem is people, I've written a number of articles on this topic in addition to bring your own device. And bring your own device seems to be the scariest part about this. Your kitchen appliances aren't going to have a palace coup and throw you out of the kitchen. But if you have a Tesla, there are people out there with Raspberries who figured out how to unlock and start your car. And this is the sort of thing that is going to be happening more and more, especially with the smart cars, the autonomous cars, how you like to park your car in the driveway, go in, go to bed, and wake up and find that your car drove off because someone hacked your car. We already know about the people who don't set reset the factory settings on network gear. I have a friend out, where I live, and he goes, oh, I don't worry about that. And I was like, oh, my goodness, you really should worry about it. And so I did a war drive, and I drove by his house, and, of course, his networks were wide open. And it's like, nope, this is just not the way to go. And it's really up to each user of what information they're leaking or making available, to other people. And this just pretty much gets down to a personal thing. I know that you're being as safe as you can. I'm sitting here at a computer with two monitors and wireless stuff all around me, and it's like I just have to be very cognizant and have very long passwords and make sure that people can't get into my system here. So it just gets back down to hygiene and education and training. So, the Internet of Things is not going to go away. I think it adds a lot of value to life and makes things easier for us. But in the big picture here, it's just more vectors you have to be aware of.
Now, the next one is AI and ML. A couple of years ago, I just wrote a whole book on that. And artificial intelligence is probably one of the most overused and overabused terms in cybersecurity. And you'll probably see a lot of Cyberbenders saying to their prospects, oh, well, this thing's got AI. I mean, to them, that's an easy way to get a customer to buy the product, saying, oh, I got AI, I'm pretty well protected. But AI, it can be a good thing and a bad thing. I mean, it's great for, like, odd process automation, but there's a flip side to it, too. And that's kind of where the deepfakes come, we've talked about before. So what are your thoughts on that?
All right. We put AI into paling software in 1995, you know, back when most people were running around in short pants. We built the world's first enterprise payment server, and we were able to process credit card transactions at the lowest possible price. So that's what the AI did for us. The AI was able to send the payment through the right payment type to get the lowest possible cost. And this was something that was easy. It wasn't easy. The AI was trainable to do this, and it was predictable because we knew what we wanted it to do. So that was a really great use of AI. Out here in the cyber world, things are changing so quickly, and new vulnerabilities are being uncovered all the time. I have an enormous database here. You know, we have an enormous database. But we cannot predict where the next attack is going to be. And if anyone says they can do that, I just kind of nod my head. I've been around and around with the AI and the ML people of what they say they can do. And I nod my head and said, well, I'd really, really like to see this. But, you know, I can tell people someone's trying to break in. You know, we figured out how to do that. But I can't tell people who the next, what the next organization is that's going to get, you know, is going to get the attack. And I just don't know. And I'm being painfully honest here. I just don't know how people can say they can do that, because all of the hype out here in the ether of companies raising money and doing this and that, it's like, okay, I have my believability hat on, and it's like, show me how this can tell. And then they go through this long thing about algorithms and, you know, the amount of data they fed in, so they're looking, you know, it gets back down to math. It's like a point is a point, you know, 2 points is a line, 3 points is a trend. Okay, we all understand that. But how can you take those 3 points or 64,000 points and point it at the next victim? I've been in this business for over 20 years. And I just can't see it. And I know it's going to make some people mad who are listening. They're probably going to think that I'm just a Luddite or stupid. But I just don't see it. And I don't think it's going to be the answer that everyone is banking on. And this is just Jim's opinion. Make that very clear. This is just Jim's opinion here.
It's my opinion, too, because you can't rely too much. I mean, you need to have both the human side and the, you know, technology side. You can't rely on AI
right
too much. And with AI, it's garbage in, garbage out. So your output's only going to be as good as your what you're inputting into it. And it's a lot of work to make sure that the data is optimized, cleansed. So, I mean, it's not as easy what people think it is. But that's just my two cents, I guess.
Yeah.
Topic is cyber risk. Now, there's so many ways of defining risk, and I think what kind of gets under my skin is there are a lot of stuff, cyber vendors, they claim that it's fancy algorithm will calculate your score like a FICO score, FICO score, whatever.
Right.
And it'll put like a
Fair Isaac company. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing that's really irritating. I mean, cyber risk is just a basic Python, basic statistics like standard deviation or coefficients of variation, but what are your thoughts on all that? I mean, cyber risk, I mean, do you have a clear-cut definition, or do you kind of let people decide on their own what they want to believe? Or
I have been trying to come up with the answer to this for the past couple of years. I can show risk in 10 different categories. but it takes a human to take a look at it and say, okay, I can see that Walmart has, you know, 100,000 breach hits a day because they're really big. But then Acme Bank over here has 25 hits a day. Who has the highest risk? A novice would say, oh, the guy with the most number of hits is most at risk. Okay, but what about the guy with 25? He could be riskier, but how can I quantify that with a number? And there's a company out there, I'm not going to mention their name because their name is exactly what they do. They claim that they can give you a score. And I've talked to these people in the past, and how good is the score and how long is the score good for? Because we know, looking at daily cyber threat intelligence, things change overnight. It's not static. And if you got an A on Monday and you got malware on Tuesday and you got a ransomware attack on Wednesday, does the A still apply from Monday? No. So you've got to have the believability index in here. And, you know, there's another company out here that they say, we're going to do an assessment of your company, and then you get to join our club. And our club is companies like, just like you, that took the test and we gave you a score. And they raised, you know, $100 million. And they're out there saying, well, if you go through this and you join us and your supply chain people join us, you're all good. And when I talked to their vice president a couple years ago, trying to get him to see my view on this of how daily reporting was really important, well, he didn't want to hear that because he wanted to be able to sell that A for a long period of time, that you're safe because you're part of the organization here and all members of this organization are safe. But that just doesn't work in the real world because we know cyber threats, you know, can change by minute, by hour, by day, by week, by month. And so how good is that score? And what is the recourse if I do business with one of these members and they pass the Trojans to me and you, Mr. Company, then said that these guys were okay? You know, where does the business risk end there? So, you know, that's kind of, you know, puts me back in with the looking at the AI and the ML of doing predictive analysis and saying, well, who's going to get hit next and what's the probability of me being hit? In my world, right, I say the probability of you getting hacked is 100%, just right there. It's 100%. Right. Someone is going to hack you, and you're going to get a breach somewhere along the way because that's just the way things go. And I don't care if you did CMMC and you've got all this compliance stuff going and you're doing all this reporting, well, you know what? You're still going to get hit. And if you can't protect yourself from that breach on the front end, you're just going to have more paperwork to fill out.
Okay, well, that segues nicely into the next topic, your data privacy laws. And we've got the GDPR, CCPA, HIPAA, CMMC. Have you dealt with all four of those, or do you help clients come into compliance with all that?
That all goes through, you know, the assessments. That's where that is covered. I don't take anybody's data. I don't ask for anyone's data, and I don't store anyone's data. And so I just say that's not my problem. You know, I collect my data from the ether, and I know where to find it. And I get data from honey nets and honey pots and things like that. This is all data that I've been able to scrape and save and then present it to people who want to buy it. But nowhere along the way do I collect credit card numbers, you know, birth dates, health information, or anything like that. And so okay, I just put my hands up. And if someone buys something from me on my website via a credit card. Well, that all that problem is MasterCard, Visa, Square, or any of the processors. See, I don't all that stuff. I third party it out, so I don't keep anything. So the answer to your question is I don't worry about it, and I don't store data in any other country. So and I don't get data from any other country. It's just the way we designed this, so we would never get in any trouble.
Well, the next issue is the remote workforce COVID. We were talking about that before the show started. Now, 2 years ago, you know, when we heard about this thing happening in Wuhan province, it was in December 2019, everybody thought, I thought it was going to stay there, but never did we realize what's going to happen 2 years later or even 1 year later and the ramifications of how to turn the world upside down. How has it impacted you, your business and your clients? And what do you think about this thing of the remote workforce? Is this going to be a permanent fixture now in the American Work Society?
Well, my entire workforce is remote now. As I said, when COVID came along, we sent everyone home. There are two answers to this. Number one, the people who work for an organization have to have approved equipment and software. That's kind of the bring your own IT. You have to make sure that someone's looking at this. You can't have a 5-year-old computer with you never updated anything and you're doing work for your employer from home. The organization has to have some standards going outbound to the remote workers to make sure that they are in compliance. And if they're not going to provide the equipment and the network, as part of the package, well, then they need to compensate people to make sure that they are, reimbursing people for updating their software and things. So, and the other thing is during the time when at home learning, you'd have children using a computer for school, mom and dad using the computer for work, and then somebody else would be playing games and going to game portals at night. So that's the most dangerous thing in the whole world, where someone is using the same computer and they are open to all sorts of cyber threats. So, I've written articles on this too, is the CIO has to have some standards going outbound for network and security and equipment to make sure that the breaches aren't going to be coming from the employees back to, the main servers. Okay?
Yeah, that was a huge hot button talk here. Okay, cool. Now, the next couple of them that we had are cyber healthcare security. It seems like the healthcare sector is hammered and hammered with ransomware. Have you dealt with anything in the healthcare sector in this regard?
Healthcare has HIPAA that's been trying to help them for years to protect, medical data. And they've done a pretty good job. But then you also get down to the doctor office, the clinic, and the hospital area, where you still have a whole lot of people touching data every day. And so there have to be some, very strong protocols there to make sure that the data is secure. And, just being a normal guy out here in the world, I had my data stolen by, Anthem lost my data, Target lost my data, Equifax lost my data, Home Depot lost my data. So someone out there can pretty much make a Jim McKee with all of the data about me that has and probably my family that has been lost and is somewhere. And the thing that really bothers me about some of the facial it's the software that allows your your grandmother's face and voice to then tell a story to somebody. And I wrote an article on this, and I can't really remember what the term is, but it can be used in the gaslighting of images and voices and things like that, because if someone could be me and my face and my voice and all of my data behind it, you've basically made a Jim McKee avatar that could be up to be used for all sorts of mischief, and it would be really hard for me to defend against it.
Would it be deep fakes, maybe?
Yes. Yeah, deep fakes. Okay. That's it. Yes.
Okay, cool. Now, when it comes to cyber, this will be the last one here, cyber cloud security, do you make use of the AWS or Azure for your stuff, or have you helped clients?
Yes.
Like,
we are an AWS. Yeah, we're total AWS. All of our software, all of our data is stored in AWS, which I like because I can stand behind, you know, their protection. Because we used to have to fill out questionnaires about where's your data and who has access to it and all this other stuff. And so I was so happy when we made the final transition of moving everything over there, so I don't have to worry about that anymore.
Okay, cool. One last thing, nation state threat actors. We were talking about this a little bit before in the show. Are you going to see more international threats or more homegrown cyber terrorism, like domestic terrorist attacks here in the U.S.?
I think we're going to see more nation state because we're in a very weak position here and we're surrounded by adversaries. And our adversaries are sharing malware with each other to make life miserable for us. And so I don't really have that much fear of a domestic group because they're after other things. They're after votes. They're after civil disobedience. But I see large amounts of money being stolen and utilities being interrupted. I see things that are going to really hurt our standard of living from outside of the United States.
Gotcha. Okay, well, as you wrap up our show now, what do you think the biggest threat's going to be for the second half of the year? And do you have a laundry list of items that you tell people like family, friends, close clients, what to do to mitigate the risk of not becoming a victim? Now, anybody can be a victim, but what can they do to mitigate that risk as much as possible?
Well, I told you I had a list that I use as the last part of a number of my articles, and these can be, I don't have it in front of me, but it's basically the laundry list of patch management, training, joining InfraGuard if you're a U.S. Based business, and you know, buying cyber insurance, things like that. That I have a list of maybe 15, and if any of our listeners want to go to redskylines.org and look at a couple of my articles, the list appears there. You know, my family and friends are all pretty much data savvy, except for the guy that won't change the password on his router, but that's his issue. But I try not to be, you know, Mr. Know-it-all. No one wants to sit down and have lunch with the guy that's going to tell you all the problems you have with your iPhone. So the media is doing a pretty good job of telling people what they should be doing. And if someone comes to me and asks for advice, I'll be happy to help them with that. But I'm not a broadcast guy, and I would rather be welcome somewhere instead of having someone say, oh, my God, that McKee is going to come chew our ears over, you know, our email accounts. So just try to get along. Okay?
Okay, cool. Now, finally, as we wrap up our show, what's the best way for someone to get a hold of you in case you're interested in their services, they need help?
They can go to either of our websites, but my email address, they can go to info or sales at either of our websites and get a message to me, or they can send me something directly at jmckee@wallpacklabs.com. And please don't send me any malware in your message.
Well, I think most email packs are now pretty good at encrypting things, hopefully. Yeah. So, but you never know. Anyway.
Right.
Jim, thank you so much for having us be our guest today. We really appreciate it. And we hope to have you again soon.
Well, thank you very much. You have a great day. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.